Was geht mit dem Kaffee?
Testing. It's just the mic. All right, so thank you. We'll resume the hearing. We're continuing with submitter's evidence, and we welcome submitter number 72, which is Danelle O'Keefe, and I presume it's Dwayne Butts.
That's the one. Welcome.
Thank you. We've read your submission, and the floor is yours to present additional material you wish.
Thank you. I guess you can hear me. My name is Danelle O'Keefe. I live at 7 Iraqi Road with my husband and two kids. And in relation to the designation sought, our property is located. Have you got a year on the map? The technology is going to be on our side. Perhaps not.
Just the correct button.
Anyhow, obviously I'm here to speak on behalf of myself and my husband, Dwayne. Okay. You said our submission number is 72. We've lived on our property for 6 years. Carry on. What's your point?
Holding my tongue wrong.
No.
So basically, we live at 7 Iraqi Road. We've had a rural lifestyle dock there for about since 2016. What we really wanted to do to start with was just show you something other than the rail hub and show you some of the properties that are in the area.
Yeah.
This one sits about 800 metres away from the rail hub, so we're a fair way off, but you can see from that particular photo that looks towards where the rail hub will be. So right up in the distance with the dark trees at the back of that shot will be,
right.
Will be the wall. We also wanted to show you what's at the site. So we currently have a property with a native bush reserve down the bottom of the property that runs right through the subdivision in Iraqi Road, which was planted out with council support about a decade ago, and community support there as well. What that's brought in and what we get to enjoy every day, what we relax to, is the sound of tuis, and we even get the occasional wood pigeon in the area thanks to all the efforts, which is absolutely fantastic. You can see the reserve down the bottom of the property. That's just a very small section of it. It stretches for probably 600-700 metres, almost a kilometre. Obviously, we've got a dog on the property, as you can see there. Loves it, and our kids do as well. We enjoy the sunsets on the deck, pointing in the same direction. And our two kids are rural kids, and they spend an awful lot of time outside, a lot more time outside than they do inside. So that's a quick insight into our lifestyle, and I guess you can see what's important to us.
Yeah.
How do we get there? We get asked the question a fair few times. Obviously, we built this in 2015, paid a premium, loved the life. No lotto ticket, no inheritance involved. It was just hard, slow to get there. We did that through working in the NZDF for 20 to 30 years, and I work at Airways now. Danelle's still out at the airbase. So we felt we've done this, doing our best for the country and the community. Our real question sits with, should we have seen the rail hub going? And we were looking to buy the section years ago. And our feeling is, how could we? No, there was really nothing evident in the plans at that stage. The site in question was largely rural zoned, still is, and at the time when the sections were there, the green belt around the city to welcome visitors was more the talk of the town than anything else. So, yeah, long story short at the bottom of the page there. yeah, that just gives you a quick overview of where we're at and where the rail hub sits with respect to us.
Me. So, as Dwayne said, we've lived at our property for 6 years. We chose to invest all of our capital, build a new home in this location, as we saw this as our little piece of paradise. It was rural enough to escape from the noise of traffic and suburban neighbourhoods to give our kids a taste of rural life, to build forts, play in the paddock, yet close enough to town so they wouldn't miss out on extracurricular activities. We've got significant concerns about this notice of requirement, both the location and what it means, not only for us, but the rest of the residents in the area. This will result in a fundamental change to the landscape and peaceful rural environment. Risks to our natural resources, in particular ground and bore water supplies, increased levels of heavy traffic on our roads, increasing congestion, emissions and risks to road users. We have also serious concerns with respect to the integrity and objectivity of the methods, analysis, investigation, reasoning and decision-making processes that have been used in selecting the site, with regards to site predetermination, bias, incomplete data and external influence during the MCA process. Our property sits outside the proposed designation, but would be negatively affected by the project. We'd be affected by noise and vibration as a result of key rail activities 24/7, increased traffic, congestion and road layout changes. We're currently woken by heavy freight movements occurring in the hours of 2 to 4 in the morning. As rail movements are forecasted to increase, combined with rail yard activities 24/7, this would further disrupt our sleep patterns and our way of life. The ability to enjoy a quiet Saturday or Sunday morning or evening on the deck or in the garden would be gone due to the 24/7 activities, with no respite, even for holidays or Christmas. Whilst noise barriers and plantings are expected to have some mitigation for homes nearer the site, we were advised by the noise specialist that these would have little or no mitigation effect on properties over 100 to 150 metres away. We, like many others down Two Tacky Road, will overlook the site to the west. We will be subject to the full effects of the noise and vibration associated with the construction and operation of the site. No respite, no peace, no more rural aspect. The road closures and predicted congestion will increase my travel time to Hākia by 10 to 15 minutes each way. Whilst this doesn't sound like much, it means extended hours for myself. And for childcare, I estimate an additional $2,000 to $4,000 a year on top of what we already pay. This doesn't include fuel costs or vehicle wear and tear. The storage of huge quantities of fuel and gas on site poses significant risk to both Bunnythorpe local residents and also the wider area of Whakaronga and Kelvin Grove in the event of an accident or major spill. Additional heavy freight on the roads in and out and around the designation will pose significant risk to all road users, in particular children, pedestrians and cyclists. The only economic benefits appear to be those that Kiwi Rail will gain, whilst the people of Bunnythorpe, Pastor North and regional ratepayers will be funding subsequent repairs and upgrades as a result of this designation, not only during construction, but far into the future due to damage caused by increased heavy road freight. The NOR reports typically refer to this area as the North East Industrial Zone, an industrial area. It is not. Only one third of this was zoned industrial. The remainder, around 112 hectares, is rural, lifestyle and residential. It's not industrial. To refer to it as such, as was often the case in the reports presented, diminishes the significance of the land, the environment and what it means to the people who live in and around this area. I'm not here to read my submission out verbatim. We've been informed, she said, that it's been taken as read by the panel. What we would like to do is speak on the main points of our submission and on subsequent evidence provided by both Kiwi Rail and the Council that pertains to our submission. I would like to acknowledge the legal challenge from Drs. Box and Whittle, which is valid and has our full support. The legality of this NOR is in question. This is a business expansion. The consolidation of facilities, the construction of a larger freight storage and forwarding facilities to profit from leasing agreements with freight partners, and the relocation of maintenance facilities do not appear to be within the realms of track and facilities maintenance and upgrade, despite the assertions of the Kiwi Rail legal team. For convenience, we'll refer to QRail as a collective, including its contracted specialists, and we'll do the same in terms of the Palmerston North Council and associated personnel. I apologise to those individuals outside of this activity who may have had no involvement or who may even disagree with the policies or actions of their employer, to being lumped in the same general group throughout this presentation. This generalisation is for convenience only and is by no means personal. I'm sure that QRail over the past week has presented compelling evidence in support of its case. The predicted economic benefits, improvements in road safety, their commitment to climate change, and realising environmental benefits. We, like a number of submitters, were unable to attend these presentations as we still have to work. We do not have the funds to obtain legal representation, nor do we have a cohort of technical specialists on our payroll to support us in our submission or presentations. However, I can surmise presentations and evidence reflected what was presented in the vast number of documents and statements provided. To begin, we would like to point out that this NOR is a business decision. It's not intrusive. It's not about road safety, climate change, transport, freight, connectivity, or Manawatu's economy. It's about profit and achieving that in the most cost-effective way possible. If it were road safety, QRail would be progressively installing arms and alarms on all level crossings nationwide, not consolidating their business activities at the cost of the taxpayer. The level crossing at Railway Road and Cleveland Line, the site of a fatal crash, still has no arms, and until yesterday just had a big pothole. If they were truly concerned about climate change and reducing carbon emissions, they would not be investing in larger diesel engines. Instead, they would be investing in their own infrastructure, not by building a freight rail hub, but expanding their electric rail routes throughout the North and South Islands, improving and upgrading intercity rail access and egress, including parking areas and buildings to encourage users to utilise transport to intercity locations, particularly in the main centres of Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, linking outlying areas with the inner city. If it were about connectivity, there would be alignment with existing rail networks, freight partners and road transport links. Not locating in an area which has no link to state highway nor freight partners. Instead, it requires significant road infrastructure investment to upgrade existing roads and reliance on the construction of roading networks to even come close to achieving this and ensuring road safety. If it were about creating jobs, additional employment opportunities would be created by QRail within the rail yard. It would not merely be the transfer of the existing 300 or so jobs, with employment opportunities limited to those provided exclusively by external providers through proposed construction activities and forecasted freight partner expansion, not QRail. The jobs and economic benefits are not created by QRail. Potentially, they would occur through either existing and proposed construction projects in the area and potential growth for increasing freight demands in New Zealand, irrelevant of QRail involvement. Instead, the opportunity to procure $40 million in public funds has resulted in a land grab, which has been enthusiastically enabled by the Council, as evidenced by the QRail business case to government in early 2018, and provincial growth application, which both specifically mentioned the North East Industrial Zone. QRail legal team state that the growth fund was a catalyst for the master plan development and site selection process. However, despite all responses to the contrary, there is substantial evidence that points to site predetermination, and this has affected and influenced all aspects of this process. As noted, QRail business case, growth fund application and cabinet papers all mentioned North East Industrial Zone, either specifically as a 65-hectare area with proximity to airport near Bunnythorpe, or described in such a way that leaves little doubt as to the location of this site. This was carried out with the full knowledge and support of local government bodies mentioned. Meanwhile, consents for residential properties were still being granted by the Council for the development in the Cleveland Line area. We oppose this NOR. We question its legality with respect to the size and scope of the designation, its location, large number of anomalies noted in the site selection process, and due to the significant adverse impacts on the people and the environment. So, here's some key points for today.
Yep. So, in summary, we've basically brought up those points around size, scope, location, and the anomalies with the MCA process, and the planning and communication prior with respect to public plans and notification. So we're talking the longer term notification rather than the last year. As far as the other effects on the impact of people in the environment, that's obviously important to us. I mentioned before supporting the legal challenge that was raised earlier, and the fact that the sites appear predetermined is a problem for us. Our emotive side is definitely around that communication over the last decade. The apparent lack of planning and communication now becomes my family's problem, which I have a problem with. Why should residents accept an uphill legal battle from the point that the NOR is accepted for any events and issues that arise from having a facility that large right next to the properties? Why should, as a comment was made at one of the public meetings, why should residents stay inside with doors and windows closed to mitigate the noise and contamination? That's just unacceptable when you look at the way we live. Long story short. So we're moving on to just what our first reaction was when we saw the proposal. And I guess where we're at the moment, just what we're going to run through today. So it's mainly focused on those points we've just mentioned. And a couple of points on the back page. Those will be a lot quicker, you'll be pleased to know. And moving on to our first reaction, really it was just, how big? That was honestly the first reaction you got when you saw the proposal. Obviously, it's going there, was the close second. So if you have a look at the red dot at the top, that's basically where we are. And yeah, we were stunned, I guess. It's also very hard to get your head around exactly how big it is. So our next reaction was, what does this compare to? Well, we're both from aviation backgrounds. So the closest thing was compare it to the airport, which you can see just to the right near the centre of that one.
Yeah, we did the same thing.
Yeah, it's really big, isn't it? It's huge. So we just quickly Google Earthed a bunch of things, and as you can see, how big is it compared to the airport? It's bigger than that. It's worth millions, but it wasn't in the early plans. It's bigger than Rangitiki Street as you head into Palmerston North. So it's worth millions, it's bigger than an airport, and it's bigger than Rangitiki Street. Still nothing in the plans. It stretches larger than Broadway to the warehouse for those in town right across the middle of the square. So we all figured out it was big pretty quickly. The visual for us was probably where it sits, just the type of people we are.
Yeah.
So I guess at the end of it, it was that summary that we're just really surprised it wasn't communicated in advance. We then have a background in aviation, which involves asset management. So if you don't asset manage the planes correctly, then you don't fly, you don't operate. So we wondered, well, how long do rail yards last? And the history in Palmy was the original rail yards back near the start of the 1900s, and then 1964, 50 years later, they were replaced again. Here we are 50 years further down track from that, and we need new rail yards. So should it have been seen coming? It's one of the questions that stood out to us very early in the piece. And how much does one cost? Well, we kind of get indicators from that through the number of documents that exist, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. So once again, through all of that, how does that become my family's problem, is the question that sat at the end of the lounge, at the end of a shocked and stunned evening, I guess.
So I'd like to go through some of the points. So we've got, starting off, follows what we had in our submission to some extent. The multi-criteria assessment process and with respect to site predetermination. So there are questions regarding integrity and accuracy of assessments, the presence of bias, the provision of inaccurate, incomplete or outdated information throughout the process, and apparent outside undue influence on decision-making processes and weighting activities. This was largely a desktop assessment due to COVID, carried out in Wellington, thereby almost completely reliant on accurate and complete information with little or no working familiarity with the area. There are questions. The site in the North East Industrial Zone was identified in a business case submitted by KeyRail in August 2018. It's also specifically listed on the Growth Fund application submitted early in October 2018. It was later redacted, but also detailed the North East Industrial Zone as the preferred site. This is compelling evidence of predetermination and arbitrary decision making. The following MCA process carried out was nothing more than legislative hoop to jump through, with direction given at various times to ensure the desired outcome was achieved. The summary report of the MCA does not show the full story of the process. The individual reports don't do this either, but give better indication of the inconsistencies and outside influence applied during the evaluation process. Workshops 1 and 2 identified a number of criteria, neither significant or fatal flaws. However, inconsistencies with the allocation assessment of constraints between the various sites is prevalent, as discussed in our submission. Subsequently, when weightings were changed following the input of council, these are in contention, as council planners and the mayor have made no secret of their desire to see the site located in the North East Industrial Zone. The subsequent combination of sites 5 and 6, which were in Longburn, resulted in flaws associated with one or other of the sites being attributed in whole to the revised site, which resulted in a flawed analysis and assessment of the site as a whole. Workshop 3 specifically mentions talks with the council senior planner, who strongly indicated his desire and intent for this particular site, which is option 3 criteria, to be selected. Further reports from council recently supplied in response to the notice of requirement also contain or mention a memorandum from the same senior planner, again expressing his desired outcome. The same planner was also heavily involved in the meetings and talks prior to the MCA process. Why a site was even considered within the city boundaries is unbelievable. Except to save cash on supplying services and the promise of land along the Tremaine Ag Corridor, which is by no means assured. For a project of this size, why would you even contemplate having it within the city boundaries, particularly with the rate of residential growth between Kelvin Grove, Bunnythorpe and Whakaronga? By the time the hub is fully operational, it would be fully built out by residential homes. A third of Palmerston North consents for the Whakaronga-Kelvin Grove area alone, with another third going to Massey. Current rail yard was built out within 40 years, as Dwayne mentioned. KeyRail stated the desire to future-proof in the August business case to government, looking at a 50 to 100-year cycle. With the current growth rate in the Whakaronga-Kelvin Grove area, including the increasing number of subdivided lifestyle blocks along Sony Creek Road and Tūtaki Road, means that potentially this site will be built out prior to it being fully operational, projected in 2050, I believe. The need for this proximity to the city is questionable. The site could be placed further away from the city in residential environs and outlying communities. A rail spur or spurs and access roads could be constructed to a main site that need only be in proximity to the North Island main trunk line and state highways. This is often the case with milk and meat production and forestry. Further distribution by road to the end user or carrier will always be the case. KeyRail legal team suggests that they're not obliged to consider all options, merely to show that adequate consideration has been given to alternate sites, including adverse effects and extent of land affected, and that the decision was not reached arbitrarily. We propose that this decision has been reached in an arbitrary manner through site predetermination, as evidenced by business case documents, growth fund application, and cabinet papers, as mentioned previously. It has not adequately considered the adverse effects and effects on private land as evidenced by a number of council Section 42A report, submitters panel, and submitters from the area. We also challenge the legitimacy of the NCO process. As I said, it appears to have been nothing more than a legislative box-ticking exercise. Due to COVID, the analysis was largely desktop process using information provided to the panel from the council, already shown to be biased, and KiwiRail, who has a vested interest. There's also evidence of council influence on assessments during the process, evidence of contradictory or inaccurate information used in assessments, and inconsistent assessment of constraints, as detailed in our submission. So in addition to those points we made in our submission, we request that the panel also consider the following. We request the panel decline the notice of appointment based on the evidence above and submitted, which suggests that the site selection was arbitrary, that options were not adequately considered due to predetermination, and that it did not adequately consider the adverse effects of this site, as the adverse effects were either understated, disregarded, or disregarded, including effects on private land and people. We request that the panel carry out, or order, an independent review of the MCA process from the initial stages, from the information gathering and distribution, working through workshops 1, 2, and 3, to ascertain the accuracy of the information, the appropriateness of the weighting criteria, and the independence of the decision making. So we moved on to planning aspects. As previously mentioned, proposing or even entertaining the idea of locating industrial activity on this scale within the city limits and in close proximity to an existing residential area, rural village, and an area of increasing residential growth shows a complete lack of foresight on the part of the city planners and is, to borrow the words of Sean Connery, an act of lunacy. This appears to be nothing more than a land grab and a cost-cutting exercise to save on the cost of providing services to a site. The size and scope of this proposal has almost tripled in size from the initial business case and growth fund application. This means that all previous assumptions regarding the strategic connectivity and integration into the environment are no longer valid. As previously stated, the site should be located outside the city limits. Rail spurs could be built to the site. The need for this proximity to the city is questionable. The site could be placed further away. As I said, rail spurs or access roads could be constructed to the main site. KiwiRail had two requirements, located near the main trunk line and a state highway. Such a site could exist anywhere else. Such a site exists in the Longburn area, which was option 6 and workshops 1 and 2, but was discounted once combined with option 5. Even then, the constraints identified that were considered limiting to the Longburn site were less than those identified in the proposed designation, but given more weighting due to council influence on the outcome. Longburn site, as previously discussed in our submission, was discounted for constraints that were never fully explained or verified. This site is located both on the main trunk line, has direct access to both Highway 56 and Number 1 line, is conveniently located next to a recognised inland port with freight partner Fonterra and additional industry, will be connected to proposed ring road, either route, and proposed additional bridge across Manukau 2 River. It is no closer to residential areas than the proposed northeast industrial site, requires considerably less earthworks for construction, does not require the closure of significant roads or require disturbance to utilities such as gas lines, high power electricity, and the council water. It even allows for and has further room for expansion without encroaching onto a village. As mentioned previously, the current growth rate in the Whakaronga Calvin Grove area, including the increasing number of subdivided lifestyle blocks along Stony Creek Road and Tutaki Road, means that potentially the site was built out prior to it being operational. The links to the ring road, freight corridors and main highways are yet to be realised. It's doubtful they'll be in place before the rail yard is operational. In the interim, the local area is forced to endure road closures, diversions, and increased construction and heavy traffic due to the lack of planning and integration on the part of Kiwi Rail and Council. Both have made promises that can't keep. Request that the panel consider these points when reviewing the legitimacy of the MCA and the suitability of the site and its, whether it is fit for purpose for this requirement. Design, construction and operational issues. Refer again to our submission and would like to add. The construction and design of tracks refers to Kiwi Rail standards. This is a new facility. Both noise mitigation and future-proofing should be at the forefront of all design to reduce noise and vibration as much as possible. Therefore, considerations should be given to making every effort to incorporate noise buffer and dampening elements in all rail track construction, rail car couplings, and all vehicle movements and equipment utilisation. Levels of and type of operational noise for particular activities should be known based on current operational activities and be able to be applied to enable modelling of expected noise levels and durations to enable mitigation and effective constraints to be in place around activities. In addition to those points made in our submission, we support those recommendations made by the Council in their Section 42A report that was regarding noise levels and hours of operation. Lighting design, please refer to our submission for those points. Transport and road networks. Connectivity, road safety and climate change are the main points here. Kiwi Rail have cited connectivity, road safety and climate change as reasons to support the designation in multiple reports, business cases and public forums. So connectivity. Connectivity was given high weighting during the MTA process. The assessment of the site used the ring road as justification for its connectivity score, despite the fact the ring road was not and still isn't confirmed. The proximity to the airport was also given significant weighting, though not justified. Kiwi Rail legal team asserts the site suitability due to its connectivity to road and air. This is inaccurate and unsubstantiated. No ring road currently exists. A route, other than the proposed lines on a map, is not even finalised. The site is not connected to a state highway, nor does it have any real ease of connection. There is no evidence to substantiate the connectivity of any freight moved by air being transferred to rail, or vice versa. Therefore, the requirement to be near the airport is invalid. Kiwi Rail freight reports show no evidence of rail-air freight movement. I work in aviation. There's no reason in New Zealand to transition from air to rail. If the freight is that time sensitive, it would go by air or rail. If it were heavy enough to go by rail, it would be too heavy to be transferred to air. In any case, there would always be the requirement to move the freight by road to reach the end user. This is another example of the bias and misinformation that was used in the MCA to obtain the desired predetermined result in government funding. Request that the panel take this into consideration when determining the validity of the MCA process with the respect to this being evidence of predetermination and arbitrary decision making. Kiwi Rail's legal submission also makes note of the fact that Kiwi Rail states notice of requirement should not be delayed should the Palmerston North transport plan not be available or delivered. The fact that the determination of this site was heavily weighted on the basis that it would be connected to these proposed routes means that we think the consideration of a delay is valid. The integration of the site should be confirmed, including funding and ring road route finalisation prior to any decision on the designation or commencement of construction. We also consider that construction of the ring road should be underway prior to any construction beginning on site should the designation be approved. Request that the panel also take these points into consideration. road safety. Kiwi Rail Council and CEDA and various specialists state that rail freight will decrease the amount of heavy traffic on the road and use this assertion as a basis for supporting the rail yard and road safety. Heavy traffic decrease. Perhaps State Highway 1 in North Island might see different, maybe. However, what is more interesting to note is that both Kiwi Rail and the Council specialist reports also state that heavy road freight in and around Palmerston North will increase with the rail yard in this location. It is inevitable. Logically, it follows that any increase in freight moved by rail will result in related increase of heavy road traffic, as the freight still needs to reach the end user or be transported to the freight mover. Kiwi Rail and the Council also acknowledge that traffic congestion will also increase as a result of the hub. It may move routes, but it will still be present, still increase congestion and risk to road users. Kiwi Rail and the Council's plan to move traffic off Tremaine Ave through relocation of the rail yard will result in it becoming Bunnythorpe, Whakaronga, Calvin Grove and Milson's problem. Existing commercial businesses on Tremaine Ave will still be there. They will still need to move and receive freight. The relocation of the rail yard will not change this or make traffic issues go away. The traffic, the congestion, the carbon footprint will still be there. In fact, it will probably be bigger. Increased heavy freight from the wider area will concentrate on the rail yard and be funneled through Bunnythorpe, which essentially becomes an intersection, not revitalising the village, but killing it, destroying its character, severing it, cutting it in two, and turning it into one big roundabout. With this added heavy road traffic, congestion will effectively cause or add to existing choke points around the city. I speak of Tremaine and Milton in particular. While cycle and pedestrian lanes in and around the rail yard are proposed, this only creates a buffer in the immediate area. Road users in the wider area, beyond Bunnythorpe, Whakaronga and Calvin Grove, Milton, the greater city area and adjacent rural zones will be subjected to the increased risk posed by the higher frequency of heavy vehicles on these roads as a direct result of the site location and the need for traffic to transit through to destinations north, south and west of Palmerston North. Kiwi Rail and the Council state that the removal of the level crossings on Railway Road is a move to improving road safety. If this were true, there would be arms on all level crossings. Despite a fatal accident on Cleavey Line and Railway Road, nothing's been done. There are no arms, no road markings. As I mentioned, the pothole that was getting bigger and bigger until it was repaired earlier this week. If road safety mattered, these arms would be installed, no question. There would be no requirement for a request for a safety review of all the crossings in the area. Again, I request the panel to take these points into consideration with my submission to determine a decision on whether the NOR with respect to delaying any decision on the designation or requiring at a minimum all recommendations as proposed by the Council in the Section 42 report traffic and transportation are in effect. That the closure of Railway Road is delayed until the perimeter road is complete and functioning, including assessment of whether it can accommodate typical traffic volumes, add additional construction traffic, with a view to assessing its adequacy for forecasted volumes from the rail yard, freight forwarding and receiving activities, including the impacts on Bunnythorpe. Climate change.
One other point at this point, I guess, with the transport side of it, we've been in Palmerston North for about 20 to 30 years. We've heard about a ring road coming, as I know a lot of the locals have been. It's basically been talked about for 20 plus years. What makes anyone think that it's going to progress at a fast enough rate to meet with this when it hasn't been managed in 20 plus years?
Point. The climate change. So, as stated in that opening, if Kiwi Rail were truly committed to climate change, it would be investing in expanding its electric train routes, not investing in larger diesel locomotives. Longer trains may reduce the frequency of trains, but the additional load on engines will result in fuel efficiency and increased emissions, irrelevant of the design. Also, should the forecasted freight become a reality, there may be no reduction in train frequency. Instead, we will have just as many trains to keep up with demand, only larger, louder, with more emissions. There's a reason why bulk fuel storage areas are part of the master plan. The increase in heavy road freight, coupled with anticipated congestion, as a result, will add to the carbon emissions burden. So whilst PERS within the council thought this would aid in reducing emissions, as stated by QRail, in actual fact, is highly likely to contribute significantly more emissions to the city, thereby preventing the city from realising its Accelerate 25 plan to reduce its carbon footprint. Noise and vibration. This site was identified in the MCA noise and vibration assessment as being the least desirable and having a high noise impact due to the proximity to residents in Bunthorpe. It logically follows that significant mitigation, restrictions and or compensation should be expected to be applied to all construction, design and operational activities on the site should it go ahead. The acoustics specialist noted during public consultations that screening was likely to have only limited effectiveness for homes over 200 to 500 metres away.
So houses at 800, for a reminder.
The planning response stated that compliance cannot be achieved with the district plan. However, this is contradicted by the Notice of Requirement assessment, which indicated that the level should be achievable through various mitigation effects. However, as also stated above, noted by the Council, this assessment may be flawed and mitigation effects not as effective as stated. Additionally, QRail reports assessments and assessments fail to note that not only is there significant change to the environment noise levels, this noise will be continuous. Construction is expected to be 2 to 3 years, Monday to Saturday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.